Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our book pick segment. It's been a couple weeks. We have not gotten book picks for 2 weeks. So today we have 20 books. And I'm not exaggerating. We have 20 books. So we have a lot to get to, and let me introduce everybody, and we'll roll through and hopefully get to all of them. And if not, they will be on our website. We welcome Suzanne Kulik and Heather Boyne from Bat and Kill Books in Cambridge, New York. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Joe.
How are you, Joe?
Delight. Anubi, thank you very much for being with us. Really nice to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Cheryl McKeon is from The Bookhouse in Albany and Market Block Books in Troy, New York. How are you?
Happy to be here, Joe. Thank you.
Wonderful. All right, Cheryl, let's begin with you. Where would you like to begin?
Okay, I'd like to begin in the Pacific Northwest.
Ooh.
Starting with Jess Walter's So Far Gone. Journalist Jess Walter has been called by Sherman Alexie, his fellow author out there, as Spokane's Hemingway, but funny. And this is Jess's eighth novel. It's timely. It is poignant. It is serious, but it's also very funny. The protagonist is Reese Kinnick. He is a retired environmental journalist who one Thanksgiving, unfortunately, punched his son-in-law in the nose. His son-in-law is a member of the AOL. That's the Army of the Lord. A militant group in near Spokane. And so Reese has gone off the grid. He's been living out in the woods for 7 years, and one day his grandchildren show up with a note from mom saying, please take care of the kids. She has gone AWOL, and she wants her dad to protect her children from their dad. So he has to come out of the woods, and he does so with great affection for the children, whom he doesn't recognize because it's been a while. And he gets involved with his supporting cast, which include a Salish old friend from his younger days, a former police officer who knows his way around groups like this, and they do end up confronting the AOL. They're a gun-toting AOL. It gets sinister, but Walter manages to keep this funny and quirky, and he gives us a feeling that there's going to be a happy ending. The scenario is eerily credible, and we really care about these people who are caught in the violence which is simmering in today's America.
I love this book, and one of the primary reasons that I loved it is because all of the characters in some way, well, maybe not all, but most of the main characters in some shape or form are relatable, if not enjoyable, if not lovable.
Right. I absolutely agree.
And it's and they all have their peculiarities, all have their quirks, and yet it's a fascinating way that it's put together of just trying to keep everything together in this mess. Stop me if you can't relate. Okay. Heather, go ahead.
All right. My first book is Missing Persons or My Grandmother's Secrets by Claire Willis, published by Picador. I missed this one when it was first released in 2024, but now it's in paperback. It was an Irish Book Award winner in 2024 and a Boston Globe Best Book of 2024. In Missing Persons, Claire explores some of her extended family's personal histories with mother and baby homes in Ireland in the 20th century. Listeners might have heard of the institutions called the Magdalen Laundries. These were institutions or asylums where individual families, as well as the Catholic Church and the Irish state, placed unmarried pregnant women. They subjected the women to manual labor. The mothers and their babies were coerced into adoptions, and they exposed the remainder children to abuse and neglect. Now, Claire asked the question, why was there such extreme shame and secrecy about sex and reproduction outside of marriage in Ireland? I think we all kind of know the answer, but, and more importantly, though, within her own family through so many generations. She explores what she calls the culture of silence, how information was withheld and knowledge circulated between women. She concludes that in keeping and selectively sharing secrets, women conspired to retain agency in communities in which they had little choice over what happened to them. The men of the family were also victims. Some, like her uncle Jackie, disappeared into the undocumented underclass of Irish immigrants of the time, never to return home to his family, after being denied a marriage with a woman with whom he had a child out of wedlock. It's powerful and moving, and ultimately a sobering story that leaves readers questioning their own family dynamics and the secrets that are held for generations.
Missing Persons or My Grandmother's Secrets by Claire Wills. Suzanne.
So, Joe, what do you know about sprayed edges?
By sprayed edges? I don't know.
So,
in a book sense?
Yes.
Okay.
One of the latest trends in the publishing industry has been to print books with these gorgeous decorative edges.
Right. They do, and the Elfie book, and they have it on. Yes, I know. Yep. Okay, the new. I can just go and recite this now, but I'll stop and play the game. Go ahead.
Some of them are so detailed, so exquisite, and it actually makes it hard for me to figure out which way to put my books on the shelf. Nobody puts baby in a corner, right? So with that in mind, the first book I'm going to talk about is one that just came out in paperback with some beautiful sprayed edges. The edges look like sparks from a campfire in the woods, and the book is called Spark of the Everflame. It is by Penn Cole. It is a slow burn romantasy novel. And it's the first in the Kindred's Curse saga, a series of fantasy novels set in a realm that was taken over by divine, otherworldly, magical beings centuries before. This world has a caste system consisting of the descended, people who are offspring of these magical beings, and the mortals, the humans who have lived in the realm since before they arrived. The story is about a character named Diem Bellator who comes along and shakes up the order of things. Fantasy readers will enjoy the world building and the interesting magic system. I loved the fact that the main character feels so real. She's not perfect. She makes mistakes, sometimes big ones, as she attempts to navigate the situations she finds herself in. I loved this book and the following books of the series, and I know others who enjoy the genre will as well.
It is Spark of the Everflame by Penn Cole. Cheryl.
My next book is A Family Matter by Claire Lynch. And I see my fellow bookseller is smiling.
Yeah.
I'd heard this was a very good book, but I didn't get around to it until the first week of June, which was so appropriate because it is Pride Month. And this is a novel which is set, it's a debut novel by Claire Lynch. She's a British writer. It's set in a dual timeline. It alternates between 1982 and the present. We meet Dawn, who at 23 is a young mother. And she has a 3-year-old daughter, and she falls in love with Hazel. In the ensuing divorce from her husband, she loses all rights to their child, Maggie. We also meet Maggie 40 years later, now herself a mother of adolescent kids. She always thought that her single father raised her because her mom had left him for another man. The tragedy and the secrets of this family due to homophobia and a legal system that enforces prejudices resonates over lifetimes. In 1982, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, the shame of being a lesbian mother was devastating. Heron, the father, would never admit the truth to Maggie, nor did anyone else. This secret was kept from her entire life. A passage from the custody hearing, which is prominent in this novel, we learn in an author's afterword, was taken from real-life court transcripts. They're ugly, they're savage. Lynch suggests a hopeful ending, but maintains suspense. This is a love story on so many levels and truly a reminder of the fragility of human rights.
Wow. Sounds amazing. A Family Matter by Claire Lynch, published by Scribner. Heather.
All right. I'm going to mix it up a little bit. I'm going to do a travel guide to the Middle Ages, The World Through Medieval Eyes by Anthony Bale. Published by W.W. Norton. And this is another book that slipped under my radar when it was out in hardcover last year. It's written by Anthony Bale, a professor of medieval and Renaissance English at the University of Cambridge in England. As we head into summer, I would like to recommend this book to those readers who enjoy travel books with a twist. contains advice that circulated among those venturing to the road for pilgrimage, trade, diplomacy, war. Our companions on this journey are scholars, spies, and saints from Western Europe and the Far East. Thinking about urinating in your host's yurt? Not recommended. If you do so voluntarily, you'll be put
to
death.
Most people know that.
Well, but if it's accidental.
Hey, Bob, I'm going to urinate in your yurt.
Well, there's some
warning. Is that okay?
If it's accidental, you'll have to pay a sorcerer to cleanse you.
There you go.
Crossing the desert? Look no further than the tips from a traveler's account of his voyage across the Sinai in 1481. Take lemons with you to deter insects and a long pointed piece of iron to push into the ground to fasten your animals to. When Dame Beatrice Luttrell traveled from her big house in the east of England to Rome on pilgrimage, she advised making sure that you had your wooden walking stick blessed, and that you wear a wide-brim hat and a simple cloak to look like a sincere pilgrim. Lore had it, when you traveled to India, you would be able to see a unicorn with the body of a horse, elephant's feet, and a pig's tail. In the middle of its forehead, a single horn 4 feet long and sharp. You must beware its awful bellow. It can be killed, but it cannot be tamed. So a travel guide to medieval ages is a witty and unforgettable exploration of how Europeans understood, and often misunderstood, the larger world. And because it's in paperback, it fits right in your travel bag.
A Travel Guide to the Middle Ages, The World Through Medieval Eyes by Anthony Bale. Suzanne.
So my favorite genres are fantasy and science fiction.
Yep.
And with that in mind, my second pick is not a new book, but it's a science fiction novel that came out in 2021. It has a movie slated to come out next year, and it is Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. This book is about a high school science teacher who wakes up in a spaceship with amnesia and two corpses and has to figure out why he's there. He is part of a Hail Mary attempt to save Earth from an alien invasion unlike any you've experienced in other science fiction stories. The book does jump around in time a bit, as our main character slowly remembers his past and what events led him to be on this ship. For my fellow audiobook listeners, I highly recommend the audio version of this one, as it has an aspect to it that does not come across the same way in print. Either way, it is compelling, witty, and enjoyable book for readers who have already loved the genre, as well as a great intro for folks who haven't experienced as much sci-fi.
Andy Weir is the author of Project Hail Mary. Cheryl.
Okay, this is a little more humorous than the last two that I spoke of. It's Only Drowning, A True Story of Learning to Surf and the Search for Common Ground by David Litt. And this comes out next Tuesday, so either pre-order from your local indie, always recommended, or put this in your date book. Journalist and former Barack Obama speechwriter David Litt, he wrote Thanks, Obama. He's also credited for some of the witticisms that Obama delivered at the correspondence dinners. We remember those.
Mm-hmm.
And here David is chronicling the challenges of learning to surf, braving both the New Jersey cold Atlantic waves and also the unpredictable hours with his teacher, his conservative brother-in-law, Matt. At 34, isolated by COVID, Litt had situational depression. He was struggling with existential terror for the future. In contrast, his brother-in-law, Matt, a Harley-driving anti-vax Joe Rogan fan, was content, always seemed to be happy. So David thought, why not pursue Matt's hobby? And he did ask his brother-in-law for help learning to surf, although he early on said, learning to surf feels like learning a language that wants to kill you. From New Jersey, they together, they surf travel to, after they've surfed quite a bit in New Jersey, many days, many nights, to Costa Rica, to California, with a goal of surfing Hawaii's North Shore. Now, I don't even wade, but I found myself completely engaged with David's descriptions of surfing. And as authors, we learn to be familiar with the terms ragdolling, getting barreled, facing a cleanup set of waves. In this delightful memoir, he includes the many contrasts between the brothers-in-law and also the detente that they find in the common ground.
Sounds fascinating. And again, David's first book, that was great.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, that was really fantastic. So David Litt is the author of this book, which it's only drowning. Okay, Heather.
All right. The Lost Orchid, A Story of Victorian Plunder and Obsession by Sarah Bilson. Published by Harvard University Press, Professor Bilson teaches English literature at Trinity College in England. The Lost Orchid begins in 1818 when a root arrived in a small English village in a packing crate from Brazil. The amateur botanist who nurtured it soon realized that it was a rare orchid not seen in Britain. It was perfect timing because orchid mania was sweeping Europe and North America, driven by wealthy plant collectors eager to display exotic flowers in their homes. Sarah Bilson tells the story of the international quest to discover and market rare plant specimens. Unlike romantic adventure stories, she also examines the dark side of this frenzy, the environmental harm it did, damaging fragile ecologies, and the social harm it did through the power of colonial overreach. It has what I call the holy trinity of a good nonfiction book: readability, great story. It's well-researched. It has amazing foot and end notes if you want to dig deeper. And it has a comprehensive index for easily accessible information. Sarah Bilson has also written several other books about women writers. And so for those people who love to discover a writer who piques their interest, she has a very deep catalog.
The Lost Orchid, A Story of Victorian Plunder and Obsession. Suzanne.
One of my favorite books that I read a few years ago was Untamed by Glennon Doyle. Mm-hmm. Today I'm going to talk about her latest book, We Can Do Hard Things, Answers to Life's 20 Questions, written by Glennon Doyle with her wife Abby Wambach and her sister Amanda Doyle. Back in 2020, when Untamed released, I heard her quote, "We can do hard things," in reference to teachers and students returning to school in 2020, which was coincidentally the year my oldest started pre-K. This has been one of the affirmations I make my girls say every day before school for the last 5 years. So when this book came out a few weeks ago, I knew I had to read it. This book is a compilation of advice and wisdom that these three accomplished women have compiled as they find themselves struggling through different aspects of life. Each chapter answers a different question, such as, why am I like this? How do I figure out what I want? How do I love my person? Parenting. Am I doing this right? And so many other questions that many of us deal with in a cyclical fashion throughout our lives. This is one of those books that you can pick up as needed and return to time and again.
We Can Do Hard Things. Glennon Doyle, Abby Wambach, and Amanda Doyle are the authors. All right, Cheryl.
My next book is one that released today. So we have a stack at Bookhouse, and I'm sure that all the booksellers have stacks at their stores as well. This is a debut by Jessica Berger Gross. And I'm here to tell you that this is one where you sit down on Sunday morning and you don't get up until Sunday evening. And you've had a wonderful time.
Oh, nice.
It's just a completely good book. It is a family that moves from Brooklyn to Riverburgh, Maine. A necessary compromise for the Blums because Gus, the dad, has received a lucrative offer from a prestigious liberal arts college. They can do so much more with his income in Maine than they could in Brooklyn. So we have Gus, his wife Claire, the mom, and Hazel, 18, and Wolf, 11. They're a little bit anxious about it, but Claire muses, wasn't Maine like upstate, only more so? But an event on Hazel's first day of her senior year upends not only the family, but their new rural community. We really, really like Hazel. She's a good student. She's focused on her college applications. The principal of her new high school on the first day says, why don't you come to my office and talk about the literary magazine? At which point he closes the door and propositions her. Hazel firmly says no, and the family's life is upended. They're a close-knit family. They don't keep secrets, and each of them is very likable. They react to this egregious administrator's act in ways they begin to question. The community is involved and upended. It's funny, believe it or not. It's loving, but it's unmistakably a story of misplaced power.
The name of the book is Hazel Says No, Jessica Berger Gross. It's out today. Debut novel, very exciting. Hazel Says No. All right. Thank you, Cheryl. We go to Heather.
All right. My final section, The Salt Stones, Seasons of a Shepherd's Life by Helen Wybrow. It's published by Milkweed. Just as an aside, Milkweed is a nonprofit literary publisher. They receive support grants from the NEA and through the Minnesota State Arts Grants.
They used to.
This is true. Although it's Minnesota.
Yeah.
The Salt Stones is a memoir about Helen and her partner's 200-acre sheep farm in Vermont. It is described as a profoundly moving meditation on the lessons and wisdom that come from raising a family, tending sheep, and living close to the land. So you need to think Braiding Sweetgrass and Goat Song by Brad Kessler. Sometimes the best recommendations come from our customers, and I knew when the special order came through for this book that we would make sure that we ordered extra stock. It's beautifully written memoir, and it fits right in with the Bat and Kill book vibe. So, The Salt Stones.
The Salt Stones by Helen Wybrow. Suzanne.
So sometime around 2006 or so, I jumped on the bandwagon and caught up on the Showtime series The L Word about a group of lesbian friends living in L.A. I loved this show. My next pick is the memoir, which just released this month, called So Gay for You by Leisha Haley and Kate Monig, two of the stars of the show. It details their experiences with being cast for and part of the show, coming out and finding their friendship and navigating their rise to become the icons that they are in the queer world. It's entertaining, funny, poignant, and relatable in many ways. It is interesting reading a memoir written by two people. It's kind of a back and forth style, and I loved seeing the glimpses into their lives, complete with pictures. Whether you are a fan of the show or not, they are ladies with a compelling story.
It is So Gay for You, and let's see. I think we have time for one more book. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay, Run for the Hills by Kevin Wilson. This is an opportunity I want to take to suggest a Libro FM audio. Marin Ireland reads this book. And Kevin Wilson, if you have read him, or if you haven't, I will tell you, he's quirky, he's funny, he's witty. But Marin Ireland takes this to a different level. And in Run for the Hills, the hill that we're referring to here is Charles or Chuck or Chip or Carl, a serial father who has spawned four children, the oldest of which is 44. And when he realizes he has siblings across the country, he determines that he will meet them, collect them, and they will go and confront their dad.
Oh, wow.
They've determined he's in California.
Oh, very disturbing.
It's a road trip. It's a road trip to end all road trips. They're really nice, likable people.
Yeah.
We have a college basketball star, an organic farmer, a precocious 11-year-old, and Marin Ireland does the voices just beautifully. So we like all of these people, you know, and even dad really isn't that bad.
Run for the Hills, Kevin Wilson, and you can also catch it, the audio version, Libro FM, which helps independent bookstores wonderfully, by Marin Ireland as the narrator and published by Echo. We have a lot of books we didn't get to, but if you go to our website, you can find out the entire list and see it there, and you can also go to the stores individually, batandkillbooks.com, bhny.com. And you can go to wamc.org/roundtable to see the entire list from all three of our booksellers this morning. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you all here.
Thank you.
Thank
Great
you
to
for
be
having
back
us.
Doing book picks.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank
You're
you,
listening
Joe.
To The Roundtable on WAMC.